no disclosures to share. Thank you, Elena, for the invitation and the introduction. I didn't realize my bio was so long, so I'm going to have to figure out a way to shorten that up. But just a little bit more about the advancement project. So she shared sort of our vision for California, but let me just say this. AP is a nationwide civil rights organization. We are young. We're 15 years old. This is our 15th year. And we like to say, well, we are a sort of a next generation civil rights organization. I like to say we're not your mama's or civil rights organization. And there's a few reasons how we sort of why we say that. First is that we are clear that the issues that one community faces generally is also an issue that other communities face, that problems no longer are single race an issue, and therefore the solutions really need to come from a multiracial perspective. And so that's first and foremost sort of how we approach the work. We're also pretty clear something's happening. I didn't do that. Oh, maybe not plugged in?
No, that mouse
is not there. Well, while we work on that, I'll also say this, that we also understand that the tools for civil rights need some update, right? So what was so successful in the 60s and 70s, the universe has shifted. A lot of the rules have shifted. So how do we experiment with new tools and new approaches? It came to a very sharp focus for us in Los Angeles because 20 years ago, we saw Los Angeles burn. A lot of it was because we could not get over some of the racial disparities and oppression that we were really facing out there. And so how do we do things a little differently as a movement? The other thing I'll say about our work is that we build unlikely alliances. So I'm a progressive, but too often on the left, we're so very sure that we're right, which means that we're very sure that everybody else is wrong. And we have a hard time sort of bridging those divides, which are really necessary to make true change. And so in LA, we launched this work around community violence. And it was 6 or 7 years ago that we launched this. We said to the city of LA, hey, think of gang violence not as a law enforcement suppression issue, but as a public health issue. And how do we prevent it? How do we get law enforcement to work better with the community, particularly police and former gang members who are gang interventionists? That kind of collaboration, we've seen now the lowest levels of violence in LA since the 60s, and a 52% drop in gang-related shots fired in the city. Huge sea change in terms of how LA is in terms of those works. And that was because we brought unlikely alliances together. We do the same kind of thing with, left and right, Dems and Republicans, sometimes labor and community groups don't always get along, so bringing those folks together, so on and so forth. The last thing that we focus on is around policy and systems change. Even though it may be our friends, that may be the mayor or the governor or leading an institution, there is systemic structural racism that's embedded and baked into these systems that have been for decades. And how do we support our fellow progressives to actually root out where those systems don't work for our communities and make those particular changes? So that's sort of what we do at AP. Here are some of the programs that we do in California. Focus a lot on K-12 and preschool and making sure that the money goes to the highest need communities first. Equity in public funds. Too often advocates kind of show up and say, hey, we need this park or we need X, Y, and Z. And the city council member or the policymaker can so easily say, actually, I love the idea, but we have no money for it. And so we're teaching people to read the budgets, to understand what's going on so that they can actually say, actually, we looked at your budget and you do have the money for it, you just don't have the will for it. And so how do we use information in that way to flip the dynamics a little bit? Healthy City is an online portal that we created, an information data mapping portal that we created about 12 years ago, sort of Google Maps for community good. And I'll show a little bit about that. And then we do a lot of work, as I mentioned, already. What I saw was how these two communities of color who, in the end, a lot of the plights are similar in terms of how we're always going to be sort of second class in particular ways around around power. Thank you so much.
Power. We're back.
Oh, power. On the computer. Yeah. Excellent. Yeah. Thank you so much. what we also saw beyond our ability not to kind of come together is, I think, as a community, it marked us a little bit, thinking about our sort of worst community and racial fears. We were left alone. We were left to fend for ourselves. And that, I think, has had an indelible mark in how we think about California or our work in California moving forward. Let me go back to this. So that's 20 years ago. Things have changed quite a bit. And some people, a very wise person, said demographics is destiny, right? As we've mentioned, fastest growing population, things must surely change, in Koreatown. In California, we had seen huge increases in the population. First majority-minority state, 40 years ahead of the rest of the U.S. And API communities had grown dramatically. About 15% for L.A. County, as you've mentioned. And so we would hope that some of the power dynamics between communities have shifted in places like Koreatown. Unfortunately, that's not the case. Whereas demographics would be destiny if it was a level playing field, if we were talking about power structures and systems that made things level, unfortunately, when it comes to so many communities of color, it's actually not a level playing field, right? So just having the numbers doesn't really get you there, because in the end, the structures don't work in your favor. Let me make sure I know what I'm saying next. So where are we now in Koreatown? Fast forward 20 years. Koreatown now is a sprawling economic and cultural powerhouse. You know this because I see a lot more hipsters in Koreatown, right? The tight pant quotient, the ironic beard, like a lot of that is everywhere in Koreatown. And so people are coming in. I mean, it's the place to be. There's also, economically it's become this sort of powerhouse, but it's also shifted a lot, right? It's now 60-70% Latino, and also, as I mentioned, beyond gentrifying, it's still the mecca, though, of Korean America in sort of Southern California. It's the place that you go for your shopping, to socialize, so on and so forth. But all of that success, economically and culturally, hasn't translated into political power. That's what we'll explore just here for a few minutes. So within Koreatown, there's unfortunately still a lot of need. It is one of the most dense, park-poor places in the city of L.A. One of the things that you'll see here is that there are highlighted on our mapping platform the three parks sort of in and around Koreatown. One of those is actually a cemetery, so it doesn't totally count. And then that Wilshire Country Club, it's close to Koreatown, but not all that accessible, let's just say. So what we have in Koreatown is not such great access to parks, but a goodly amount of liquor stores and alcohol outlets, right? And so we'll see sort of the disparities in terms of that. We'll also see how over time, actually, I'm going to skip ahead here, we've also lost other resources, like early care and education resources. During the recession, it was unfortunately places like Koreatown that lost the most seats. And so just in these two zip codes, and I know this and I focused on this because my daughter was actually in childcare in Koreatown, and we lost our seat because of budget cuts. But just in those two zip codes, we saw actually a loss of 606 seats, right? So that's 600 families that no longer have access to childcare. And so there's a lot of need in Koreatown, but do we have the commensurate political power to do something about that? And unfortunately, the answer is still no. Redistricting in Koreatown. Redistricting has been a key issue that we focused on because we think the lines need to be drawn well for people and communities to be well represented. And Koreatown has been a solid, what we call, community of interest. So it therefore should be kept whole as part of the district so it could have a powerful voice when it comes to their elected officials.
Unfortunately, the past several rounds, the last three decades of redistricting, Koreatown has actually been cut into four different city council members. And so its voice has consistently been diluted. And so in 2012, we thought there was a real opportunity to change some of those dynamics. But we saw some of the old school way of thinking about Koreatown kind of persist. Elected officials see it as ATM. A lot of good Korean businesses are happy to fork over campaign contributions and not ask for too much, right? They might ask for an easement here. They might ask for something that's good for their business, but not anything transformative for the community over writ large. And so there have been these dynamics that have existed for some time. So in 2012, Advancement Project relaunched this website called Redraw California. It was to help community voices to basically draw their own lines and submit them saying, hey, this is what you need to consider when drawing the state legislative lines, the local city lines, so on and so forth. We focused in during the LA city redistricting process on places like Koreatown, and the system would allow you to do, you know, a few cool things like, you know, where is your system now? How does the racial breakout happen in your particular district? How are the schools doing? And then to also kind of just draw, as I said, your own district, and then to submit that as a report, right? So all the tools you need to draw a political lines, you would have access to right here. What we loved was a lot of folks use it for the city of LA. A lot of voice, a lot of community voices impacted or put into the process. And Koreatown showed up in particular. They were very concerned about this particular city council district, I'm sorry, neighborhood council district, this Wilshire Corridor neighborhood council district, which represents quite a bit of Koreatown. People wanted it all in one city council district. For once, let's have our economic and our neighborhood sort of in one particular district so we can have a more powerful voice and potentially even elect a Korean American. Hundreds of grandmas and grandpas showed up, right? All wearing shirts, and you don't get that very often, that kind of energy, that kind of mobilizing. And after months and months of pressure, after really pushing, this was unfortunately the result. Actually, that city council district from the 10th actually subsumed because this particular city council member had all the political power. Did not have to listen to those hundreds of senior citizens, and actually co-opted that neighborhood council, this Koreatown area, so that it could essentially still have access to the ATM, but not necessarily have so many voters that he'd have to do what they say, right? And so it is unfortunately another story of how we've lost, even in 2012, even with this growth and demographics, we're still losing the political battle. What I love whenever we do redistricting is people sometimes say, hey, what does that district kind of look like to you? And some folks did this. It actually looks like a turkey with the head kind of sticking into Koreatown, gobbling up all the money. I didn't do that. The LA Weekly did that. All right. So where do we go from here? You know, one of the things that we really have to think about is how within immigrant API communities, how we have to think differently about our relationship to government. There are too many times that my parents and their friends thought of government as an impediment or think of something to avoid, whether or not because of undocumented reasons or just you learn to do on your own, right, and to rely on other people in your community. And that thinking's got to change because we unfortunately leave too much power on the table by not engaging. I also think there has to be much stronger buildup of a cohesive and independent civic voice, something that's not linked to our business interests, but really a separate civic voice for API residents and what they need. I think we have to learn from the struggles of other communities. For this pretty sad example of our work, there are 10 other examples of working with other communities where they really are in the Latino and African American community pushing the question of community voice and power to that next level, and we need to learn from them. The other thing that I've been trying to talk a lot about to our API brothers and sisters is to do as much as possible in terms of building more cohesion with other communities, right? For the story that we heard about in South LA during the uprising, there are other stories about during the internment, Japanese Americans and African Americans sort of supporting one another, and African American families actually keeping the belongings of their neighbors, their Japanese American neighbors, while they were interned. That kind of support, the kind of support between the Filipino American labor organizers and Latino labor organizers in the fields of California, there are those stories of where we build cohesion, and that's more of what we got to do and less of what we've seen, unfortunately, in the past 20 years. And then finally, I think we have to think differently also about organizing. Some of the best organizing models come from urban areas. As you've mentioned, a lot of this happens in suburban areas for the API community. So how do we think differently about that? And so with that, she's held the stop sign like four or five times now. So I will stop. Thank you so much.